And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
This is Josh Weltman, co-producer of Mad Men and author of Seducing Strangers, and you're listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal in this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you, and you can find them at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, I'm joined by Josh Weltman, and we're going to talk about his new book, Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling, The Little Black Book of Advertising Secrets. Josh Weltman is a 25-year veteran of the advertising business, a co-producer of the Mad Men television series, a working creative director, writer, and artist. In his advertising career, Josh has created ad campaigns for companies like Taco Bell, Doritos, BMW, and Microsoft. He has created everything from online guerrilla marketing efforts for small clients to national campaigns for global automotive companies. Josh was part of Mad Men since the show's first season. He worked closely with the show's writers and producers to help ensure that Mad Men accurately depicted the process of creating ads and servicing clients, and that the show's advertising and business stories played true to life. He also created most of the original ads seen on the show. Josh, congratulations on Seducing Strangers, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Well, thanks, and thanks for having me.
In the beginning of the book, you mention the goal of this book is to explain how messages that make people do things work. Tell us the story that led to this book.
The story that led to the book. A client once asked me in a meeting, is there a proper ratio of brand to sell in a commercial? And when he said brand, he made those little quotation marks.
Air quotes?
Air quotes. Like, for the sake of this discussion, let's just pretend it exists, even though we can't see it or measure it. And it got me thinking, because it was such an odd question to me. It was like, what's the ratio of happiness to sunlight in a chocolate chip cookie? I couldn't wrap my head around anybody who would think of sort of what I was figuring pretty quickly that what he meant by brand was kind of the emotional connection to what he called sell, which was kind of the rational facts kind of thing. So what he was asking is how much do facts versus emotion, can you tell me how I should mix the two up to make a persuasive message?
Like a chemical equation?
Like a chemical equation, exactly. And it got me thinking, at first I kind of laughed at it and I thought, what an odd thing and how can people think this way? But then at the agency, when I went back to the agency after the meeting, I thought, they're always telling us to try and get inside the head of the consumer and think like the consumer and sort of come at things from their point of view. I said, okay, let me try to think like this guy for a little bit and see if I can come up with a way to answer this question in a language that he might understand. And I went through my desk and I realized that I think this happened about 12 years into my career that, I looked at all the briefs that I had been given. And regardless of medium, whether it was a radio brief or a television commercial or a print ad or something like that, I thought that everything that I had been asked to do really came down to creating four kinds of ads. Ads that introduced products, ads that tried to drive traffic or sales, ads that tried to differentiate one product from others in the category, and ads that tried to create a sense of simpatico with a certain group or target audience. And those I ended up calling thank you notes and inside jokes. You know, so there were these four different categories. And I realized, looking at these, that the type of facts and type of emotions that we were trying to evoke in each one of these four different categories of ads were very different. As an example, when you're trying to build sales, bump sales, you need some sort of limited time offer. You need a factual limited time offer. You know, this deal is only good through this weekend or Labor Day or the next whatever. And you need, because what you're trying to do is evoke the emotional sense of urgency in a prospect, in the customers. And you don't get that sense of urgency unless you have a limited time offer attached in the ad. So when you're trying to bump sales, the type of emotion and the type of facts that you include in that message work very differently from what you're trying to do when you're trying to differentiate your product or service from other products and services. In that case, when you're creating those kind of ads, what you want to the facts that you're dealing with are, you know, the one most unique thing about the product or service, and the emotion you're trying to evoke is one of familiarity with that memorable, unique difference. You know, does that make sense? So the it's not a question of either or. Do I base my marketing and messaging more on the sell or the hard facts and features, or the brand, the emotional connection? It depends on what you're trying to achieve. And that was sort of the big aha for me in the course of my career, and what I spend a lot of time talking about in the book is how to identify what it is you want from your marketing communications program, and then how to get it. You know.
Let me just read one quick excerpt from the book that was one of my favorites, and follow up with a question. Persuading is about getting someone to do your will. Selling is about making your proposition, goods, or services attractive, visible, and well-priced. Yet there's no way around it. To achieve certain business goals, companies and organizations and the people who do the manufacturing, measuring, and managing need to get emotional. That's where seduction comes in. Seduction takes both sensitivity and insight. Seduction is about listening to customers and understanding their feelings, wants, needs, and motives. It's understanding what people desperately want to hear about themselves and telling them just that. Josh, tell us the secret purpose of advertising.
I think the secret purpose of advertising is to make people happy. I think that happiness occurs when expectations are met or exceeded by reality. And advertising is a great way for companies to set expectations in the minds of their customers that their products and services can then meet and exceed. I think that if you fail to set expectations for your products and services, either no one will set expectations or somebody else will set expectations. You know, but either way, those expectations don't exist in the mind of your prospects, so your products and services have nothing to meet or exceed, and you can't get a happy customer.
Yeah, in reading the book, I thought that that point was almost more important now than it used to be, because of the megaphone that everyone has with social media and the internet. Whereas in the past, it might have taken a while for a lousy product with great advertising to catch up with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you talk about Bill Birnbach from Doyle Dean Birnbach, who is famous for saying something like, nothing kills a bad product faster than terrific advertising.
Exactly.
It seems like now it's almost immediate, whereas in the past it was, you know, the customer couldn't tell as many people quickly, and they might have given up on it. Now they can literally tell millions.
Sure, absolutely. You know, one of the things that when you adopt a social media strategy and you start trying to use other people's, you know, social networks that they've bought and paid for.
And they've built.
You are also buying into, you know, their media strategy, whatever it is for themselves, you know. So their agenda for your product may not be yours at all.
Mm-hmm. You talk in the book about the four fundamental questions on every consumer's mind, and I thought that was very interesting. I was amazed that you could break it down to four, but I think it'd be enormously helpful for people to hear what they are.
Well, they kind of correspond, lo and behold, real neatly to those four kinds of ads. I think they're basically what people want to know before spending money on any product or service is, you know, what is it? Why do I need it now? What makes it different from other things? And who else thinks it's good? And I think that social media, you know, back to your previous question, social media is wonderful for answering that last question. Who else thinks it's good?
Social proof.
Right. It's not particularly great, in my opinion, for answering the other three. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you develop a product or service, usually nobody knows better than the company what makes it different. They've spent a lot of time and effort trying to distinguish themselves or figuring out what's going to make them stand out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And leaving that up to, you know, consumers to figure out or talk about or pass around is, you know, is a little nuts. Mm-hmm.
Those four sound very simple, but I don't know, maybe since the beginning of time, so many advertisers still miss the mark on one or more of them.
Yeah, I think they probably miss the mark more by trying to answer too many of those questions in one message. Because like I was talking about before, to answer each one of those questions, you need sort of different facts and you need to evoke different emotions for each one, you know. So when you mix things together and try and do a lot at once, people don't know what the message is about, what they're supposed to do, what you're trying to tell them. It just becomes confusing and noisy.
Yeah, they're not really in their swim lanes.
Right, exactly. You know.
Yeah. So let's talk about the difference between what works online versus what works offline. And I thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the book. And I thought it was very, I wish more people who've been in the business as long as we have could read that part to understand how things have fundamentally changed. And if you could just go into that and specifically, let me see here. Where you say one of the problems today's advertisers and persuaders are having online is that after years of being told the best way to persuade the public is by making ads or stories that show the product is hero, advertisers are having to adjust to putting their products in supporting roles in stories about other heroes. Can you talk a bit about that? I thought that was one of the most important parts of the book.
Sure. I remember really early on, I think it was a college drama class, the first lesson, maybe even the first paragraph out of the instructor's mouth was, when people look at a movie or a play or any story, they project and they're looking at the hero saying, I am that guy or I want to be that guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you said, growing up in advertising in the last 30 years, we were taught to use media to make stories about the product, and the product was the hero. You know, the product was the thing that fixed your problem, that stopped your headache, that got your dishes clean, that
made, you know, people like you.
That made people like you. Exactly. So what we were doing in print and television and all that sort of stuff was making stories about the product being the hero, and the product was center stage, and you always had to show, you know, some example of what the product or service could do for somebody. And what happened when people sort of took control, like you said, and built their own digital networks, they became sort of the heroes of their own movies. When you're cruising around or surfing the internet or doing whatever you're doing, you're the editor, writer, director, hero of your own story. And if you're trying to, if you're an advertiser and you're trying to work your way into somebody else's story, you have to remember that it's very impolite to show up in somebody else's movie and start acting like you're the hero.
Talk about the ads being booed at the theater.
Well, you know, when they first started putting ads in movie theaters, I think I tried to use the example of, you know, you've bought that seat, you've paid for that time, it's yours. You really don't appreciate somebody coming along and playing an ad in a time and space that you've bought and paid for.
Yeah.
It's quite different on television, where even though people don't talk about it, they're aware that the programs are being provided by the sponsors. Mm-hmm. You know, if they don't give their attention to the 2 minutes of advertising, you know, they don't get the programs, and the ads are trying to be interesting and speak to the people watching. But it's a very different relationship with the advertiser when somebody gets the stories or show for free at their expense versus when they pay for it.
I'm watching Mad Men on Netflix. I don't want an ad interrupting. When I'm watching it on AMC, I get it.
Okay, that's right. That's exactly right. But what's shifting around is and even with the same box, like you just said, you can be watching your television set in your den, and sometimes you're watching stuff that you've paid for, and sometimes you're watching stuff that sponsors have paid for, you know. And it's not like ads don't belong on your TV set anymore. It's that they only belong, you know, where you haven't already paid for the movie, you know.
And yet so many marketers seem to be treating the internet experience as another broadcast channel.
Yeah, they got in the habit of programming for boxes, and now they're being forced to program for people, you know, and be aware of where, you know, what sort of screen the people are watching the show on, and what sort of relationship they've established with that person, based on the economics of the platform being used.
And there's some interesting points you make about how when someone's online, they're doing different things. They have different motivations than when they're sitting passively. And that's why, if you could say a little bit more about that, that would explain further the idea of why the advertiser needs to be in more of a supporting role. Like maybe the fish story.
Which one's you can edit this out, but I'm sorry.
No.
Right.
Where you went fishing.
Yeah, that's the last chapter of the book. Let me get the title exactly right.
Oh yeah, the titles. title.
Yeah. It was. Let's see. A trout, a Swiss Army knife, an iPad, and YouTube, and what. I put this chapter in the last one because I do want to talk to you know, established brands and advertisers who are struggling with how people, you know, how to connect online and what they should do and what would be appreciated, et cetera, et cetera. And I tell a story about my wife and I going fishing in Mammoth Lakes about 4 years ago. And it had been a long time since either of us had been fishing. And accidentally, we spent a nice day on a lake and pulled out a really beautiful rainbow trout that I had no idea how to clean or cook. And I carry with me, especially when I'm camping, a Swiss Army knife that my parents gave me as a gift when I was 13. And I was staying at a friend's house up in Mammoth Lakes, and I had an internet connection, and I had brought an iPad. And I figured I'd go back to the house, get online, and I could just type in, Swiss Army knife, because I carried a model called the Fisherman, and I was sure that there would be videos or something online telling me how to use each of the tools in the Fisherman to do what the Fisherman knife should do, which is clean a trout. Mm-hmm. And instead, I got nothing. There were no instructional
product information.
No product information that I was looking for. So I went to.
But it was
YouTube.
All about them.
It was all about them, all about the knife and the steel and the whole thing, but nothing about what I want. You know, my movie at the time was, right. You know, Josh Weltman caught a trout, you know, and I'm trying to figure out how to make myself the hero of this movie using my trusty Swiss Army knife. And instead, I went to YouTube and cruised around a little bit until I found somebody I don't know their name. They didn't identify them, but they had a nice red shirt, and they had a method for cleaning a trout with a sharp knife and a couple cuts and a yank of your thumb that was really fantastic. And I thought, and the reason I go through this whole thing in the book is that's a complete missed opportunity for a Swiss Army knife. There's tools on the knife that I don't even know what they're for. I would love to find out what they're for. They're probably really useful. Mm-hmm. But what should be on the Swiss Army Fisherman website is how to use this knife to do what you do with fish, how to take out a use the tweezers to take a hook out of your finger, you know, that sort of thing. And those are the kind of things that I'm hoping that established brands will start doing online, which is helping people use their products in supporting roles to turn themselves into the hero of the story. You know, I was 5 minutes away from holding up my trout and my Swiss Army knife in my selfie on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But instead, there's just a picture of the trout.
That's great. Well, before we wrap up, let me ask you a few questions of interest to listeners of the Marketing Book Podcast. Is there a recent marketing or business book you've read that you recommend?
It wasn't recent. I haven't had a chance to read that many in the last few years that are contemporary. I did a lot of research, you know, while I was working on the show. But I always say this to people: there was a book called The Rules, which is about how single women could find husbands. And it was sort of a book about dating and about finding a good match. And I often tell people in marketing and advertising that it's the single best book on how to get new business that I've ever read.
Oh, wow.
Think of yourself as an advertising agency, as a single woman who wants to attract a husband, the husband being the client. The rules are fantastic. It just lays out how to get new business and how to win a client's or get a client interested and then hooked on you.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. I know we both have daughters, and I'm
yeah, right.
thinking multiple purposes here.
I accidentally read this before I had daughters, but nothing more helped me win new business accounts.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. Are there any marketing or business books that are on your upcoming reading list? I know you probably have a little bit more time now that you've finished writing a book.
Well, I'm about three quarters of the way through the Jobs biography that, you know, it's Isaacson, right?
Isaacson?
Isaacson, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. The Steve Jobs biography by Isaacson. And it's just fascinating to me again and again.
I haven't read it, but I've spoken to some friends who read it, and they said it just pulled him in. I probably like his personality.
Yeah. You know, it here's the thing that really sort of got me about it was how passionate he was about his products. The funny thing about, you know, he's legendary, a tough guy to work for and very opinionated and sort of stubborn and bullheaded. But the number, what struck me was this is a guy who was voted CEO of the year or something like that for like 7 years in a row by other CEOs in the country. And in the book, he bursts into tears multiple times, you know, in number of situations. And I just try and think, you know, if you want to do what he did, are you willing to do what he did? You know, are you willing to get that emotional and sink that much of your stuff into your products and services that you'll burst into tears, you know, when something doesn't go right, you know? Do you feel that passionately about what you're working on, you know, kind of thing? It's one thing to vote him a great CEO, but why won't people emulate him, you know? Why won't people do what he did?
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. And it ties right in with this notion of, you know, companies that succeed or have a certain passion. They have a certain mission, however ill-defined, but they feel like they've got a purpose rather than just trying to make money.
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, at one level, I think I would paraphrase what you just said. I think companies that have people that have passion, you know, are companies with passion. But the company doesn't, you know, it's not, you can't write it in a manual or you can't build it out of nothing. It has to come from the people who are leading the company.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like so many things that relate to the importance of culture in a company.
Sure. Sure.
So how do you continue your business education? Who do you follow and what do you read and who do you listen to? How does Josh do it?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. I used to read a lot of sort of military history and stuff like, you know, the Art of War.
Kidding. That's one of my favorite subjects.
Sure. you know, von Clausewitz. And I got into Reese and Trout big, the 22 immutable laws of marketing, uh-huh. Marketing warfare.
Yeah, yes. I loved it.
I just never found anything else that laid it out so simply and worked so well, especially in the areas where I spent most of my advertising career, which was rather mature industries, fast food, automotive, and high tech isn't particularly mature, but it's a very kind of strategic business. So those books were the ones that were really helpful to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, before we end, I just wanted to say that having worked on Madison Avenue for the first third of my career at big, you know, the biggest ad agencies in New York, watching Mad Men for me was very, very important. And a lot of people would say to me, particularly younger people, they'd say, "Oh, you worked on Madison Avenue. Was it just like Mad Men?" And of course, I would always say, "Yeah, it was just like it, except for not as much drinking and sex." But the thing that I'm serious about is that the show really got the advertising part right. So in other words, it just the struggles that we had, I just couldn't believe that you all were able to capture that in a bottle. So having read your book, I learned that you were one of the two technical directors that or co-producer. Hollywood, but I really wanted to congratulate you on that, and hats off to you, and it's been a pleasure to speak to you. How can listeners find out more about you and your book?
They can go to seducingstrangers.com, and that'll take you right to my website, which is joshweltman.com. Whatever door you go through is fine by me, but the seducingstrangers.com will take you to the page where you can look inside the book, read a couple chapters, go to a retailer and buy it if you're interested.
The book is Seducing Strangers, How to Get People to Buy What You're Selling, The Little Black Book of Advertising Secrets. The author is Josh Weltman. Josh, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. Links to everything mentioned are in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the podcast newsletter to get notified of every new episode, its show notes, links, and other useful things. Also, at marketingbookpodcast.com, there are about 20 free marketing ebooks on a wide variety of topics that lots of people have found helpful. If you're one of the people who have left an iTunes or Stitcher review, I really appreciate it, and it has more impact than you might realize. A one-sentence review shoots the podcast way up in the listings. Finally, I get such a kick out of hearing from my listeners. It really makes my day. To send a message, just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and click on the Contact Podcast button. Got an idea or suggestion? Maybe I'm doing something wrong? Let me know. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. Till next time.